Good evening, Simon. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you, Andrew. Good evening.
You've been doing some work on pulsars, and you've found a rather unusual one, I believe.
Yes, we did. This was a survey that we did at Parkes in 1989, and we discovered this very unusual pulsar. Of the 650 pulsars that are known, this is the only one, the only radio pulsar known to be orbiting a big star. And astronomers call this star a BE star. And B just means, well, it doesn't really stand for big, but it is one of the biggest stars that you can get. It weighs about 10 times the mass of our sun, and it's about 6 times bigger than our sun is. And this very, very tiny pulsar, the pulsar is only 10 kilometers across, is orbiting this BE star. Now, its orbital period is 4 years, so that means it takes 4 years for it to go around once. You know, the Earth takes 1 year to go around the sun, and this pulsar takes 4 years to go around this BE star. Now, the other exciting thing about the system is that it's a very eccentric orbit, so it doesn't really look much like a circle. It's very, very elliptical. And that means that every 4 years it comes very, very close to the BE star. Close enough so that because pulsars are such high energy objects, it can cause massive disruptions to the BE star, even though the pulsar is tiny and the BE star is huge. And this event is going to occur on January the 9th in 1994, just 3 months away. And we've been preparing for it now for 6 months or so. And we're going to be using the Parkes radio telescope to look at it. We're going to be using a very large optical telescope in Siding Springs to look at it. And we've obtained time with an X-ray satellite, a Japanese X-ray satellite, and with the NASA Gamma Ray Observatory satellite to observe it in X-rays and gamma rays as well. And we're hoping this is going to really give us an insight into the physics of the energetics of a pulsar and also the state of the BE star. And what we think might happen to this system in the future is that it might turn into what's known as an X-ray pulsar. And then what happens is you can't see radio pulses anymore. You can just see X-ray pulses. And the X-ray pulses come from matter from the big star falling onto the pulsar. And because the pulsar is such a strong gravitational attractor, the falling of the matter onto the pulsar is a very energetic event. So it gives off high energy, a lot of energy, and this energy comes out in X-rays. And so what we think is going to happen is that a lot of matter will fall onto the pulsar, and that'll stop the radio pulses from forming, but it'll form X-ray pulses instead. Now, we know there's many examples of these X-ray pulsars known in the sky, but before there had never been established the missing link, if you like, between the radio pulsars and the X-ray pulsars. And we think that this system, this very exciting system, is the link between those two objects.
How long would it take to evolve from the radio source to the X-ray one?
Well, it might be actually quite fast in astronomical terms, because these very large stars evolve very quickly. And so we might expect in 1 million years or so, which is quite quick in astronomy, that this object will be an X-ray pulsar. But what we hope to find on January the 9th is that already we're seeing some sign of the X-rays when the pulsar is very close to the big star. So this system will probably be an X-ray emitter when it's close and a radio emitter when the pulsar is far away. So we see we're right in the middle between a pure radio pulsar and a pure X-ray pulsar.
Let's try and track back just how common or uncommon this sort of event is. First of all, binary stars, are they quite common or are they quite rare?
Binary stars are very common. About 3/4 of all the stars we know are binary systems. So our sun is quite rare in that regard, in that it's a single star.
And how many of those would be pulsars?
Well, you see, not all stars are big enough to form pulsars in the first place. You need to be at least 10 times as heavy as our sun, explode in a big supernova explosion, and you get a pulsar left over after that. So not all stars are big enough to form pulsars in the first place. Now, the other sad thing, if you like, is that the supernova explosion is so violent an event that the two stars, even if they were joined in the first place, can split apart quite easily in the supernova explosion. And so this explains why most pulsars we see are just single pulsars. So what's happened in this system is that the two stars have managed to survive this big explosion, but the explosion has caused this very big ellipticity in the orbit. And so the other reason we think this is very rare is that the radio pulses are very hard to see in this system. And that's because there's all this mass coming off the big star, and the big star is very bright, and it's difficult to see the radio waves. So even though some more of these systems might exist, they're very, very difficult to detect. So we were quite lucky with this one.
Whereabouts in the sky is this particular one?
Well, actually, this pulsar is very close to one of the brightest constellations in the southern sky, and that's the Southern Cross, the constellation that's on the Australian flag, of course. And it's very, very close to that. So next time you look up at the Southern Cross, you can think of this pulsar.
Okay, but you wouldn't actually see it with the naked eye, of course.
No, you can't see it optically. You can only see it if you have a big radio telescope.
So it's not a case of going out in the backyard tonight and having a look.
No, that's right. Unfortunately not. But the big star that it's orbiting around is actually quite bright. It's 10th magnitude, which is too dim to be seen with the naked eye. But if you have a reasonably decent-sized telescope, you could see the star that the pulsar is orbiting around.
Well, just suppose that this was in our own solar system, and suppose our sun was the main star. Just how close, in terms of the other planets, will the companion star become or get to it?
Well, the pulsar at its furthest distance away from its companion star is about the same distance as Saturn. And when it comes in for this closest approach in January, it'll be closer than Venus is to the Sun. So it comes very close, because you've got to remember that its companion star is very much bigger than the Sun is, 6 or 7 times bigger than the Sun. So it does come very close to the star.
Okay, now I suppose then you're all set for January. You've got your telescope time booked?
Yes, we've got 2 weeks' time booked at the beginning of January, so I'll be spending New Year up there observing the pulsar, and we're really looking forward to it.
So while the rest of Australia is partying on, you're going to be hard at it, are you?
Yes, we'll be observing night and day, but it'll be fun.
Yes, that's the point about radio astronomy. Of course, you can observe in the daytime as well as the nighttime, can't you?
Yes, that's right. It's 24 hours a day, so you don't get much sleep.
And of course, being around the near the Southern Cross, it'll never set below our horizon, so you can in fact do it 24 hours a day.
Well, not quite from the Parkes telescope, because you can't tip the Parkes telescope all the way to the ground, but you can observe it 13 hours a day, so it's a reasonable fraction of the day.
Oh, so you do get a few hours sleep?
Yes, we do get a few hours sleep, but there's other objects to look at.
Okay then. Well, thanks, Simon, for joining us on the Space Show tonight.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.